So very interested in the latest on the community center, but maybe start at the beginning, the vision for the community center, and then the latest with the property and all that stuff.
Okay. Last April, we were able to purchase 2 acres of ground in Juarez for a community center. We've been working with the architect ever since that in trying to get a proper design. I'm still a little loud. Could we cut me down just a little bit? But in any case, we've been working with the churches in Juarez. About 3 weeks ago, I had a meeting with them and showed them the plans. We had the architect come, and basically he threw up the plans on the wall and talked with the churches, and they were astounded. They really had no idea as to what we were trying to do with this community center. When we first started talking about buying a piece of land 6 years ago, we were looking at buying something just for Gracia y Paz Church and just for the San Pablo Seminary. And what that has expanded into is a probably close to a 40,000 square foot building now that will entail the ability to hold 500 people in an auditorium, a multi-purpose room that will have a basketball court that we can do sports ministries with, 10 classrooms in the upper floor, a library, a study center for pastors, basically a building that we hope will be used almost 7 days a week in multiple ways. And so not only can Gracia y Paz Church and San Pablo Seminary use that building, but we're also hoping to have concerts, other types of training, and have multiple activities going on concurrently. And so the only thing drawing us back right now from starting construction is money to get things started. We're probably looking at about a $4 million total on this building. So, does that answer your question? Other questions? Yes.
Last year, I moved to the Independence team because of kidnapping problems in Mexico. Did you get an update on that? Did it calm down any? Was that worse?
Last year, there were over 2,200 murders in Juarez alone. This year, we're on track for 3,000. Things have not gotten better. They've gotten worse. About a month ago, there was a birthday party in which 14 children were killed during the time. Some of them were suspected of being part of a gang, and so I think that's why they went in. But it's been on the news every night. And we have opened up 2 opportunities for service in Juarez this summer, but we haven't had any takers as of yet in that. Tito has a church that's going in to help him with a sports camp, but that's the only activity we have between El Paso Juarez. So while we hope that we might be able to resolve that, you know, and be able to take teams in, there are still folks who don't want to go in there, and I can understand that. Yes. Absolutely. I think even more so, folks are hurting a lot, and so we're hoping that, you know, that's one of the things that we say, we can't stop going in there, because the gospel is the only thing that's going to remedy the situation as it is. Excuse me just a minute. Are we connected?
The temptation, if I could just piggyback on what Gene's saying, is, and it's hard, it's a hard decision to make in terms of whether you go into Juarez or not. People do make decisions not to go into Juarez. And we can't obviously obligate anyone, but there's where you have to be convinced in your own mind that you know, God is calling you to do that. And should anything happen, well, you go recognizing that reality. But what do you do? There's a need. The gospel still needs to be proclaimed. There are still ministry opportunities. So what do we allow the fear to control us? And that's the thing that we're wrestling with. Yes, George?
Tito, how has the new ball field with the dugouts worked out?
I think Gene will probably answer that better. The ball field in front of Promesa de Vida.
That's where we left it that summer, unfortunately. There's been some graffiti put on it, but the community itself has not advanced the work any further than what we had done. And so it's pretty much where it was.
Do you think that stuff that's been going on in Juarez?
I think so. Plus, you know, when Juan Antonio talked to the community leaders, I think that their connection was stronger than what it is now as far as the community having interest in seeing that finished. There's actually that street that's right along there between the ball field and the school is now being used as an open-air market, pretty much, selling clothing and things like that all along there. So the characteristic of that neighborhood has changed. There's been probably about 6 murders right in that square area, and there's a rehab clinic that's just down the street that has been attacked once, and a few people have been killed in there. So there is a definite need for the penetration of the gospel. And the church itself is sending out teams. As far as evangelists are concerned, they're taking the youth out. Those of you who are high school age kids, basically are going out as part of that group every Sunday morning and witnessing to the folks in the area. Jeff Vaughn has been a part of that with Juan Antonio, and it's going out. It's been an exciting thing. So, do we want to move on to the presentation? Then maybe that'll answer some of your questions. I'm going to need to just turn this a little bit so that I can see it, because I don't like looking up the screen, talking to the things. But I'm going to give you an overview of just what the border really is. Tito's work that's going on in the east side of El Paso now is just one part of what we're doing in the 2,000-mile border. If you look at the extent of the border that goes all the way from San Diego to Brownsville, you see that it's 2,000 miles, but if you consider the fact that it's 25 miles to the north and 30 kilometers to the south of the political border, it encompasses an area that's the size of New Mexico. And so it's quite an extensive area that we have to minister with for just 22 people on our team. We asked the question, so why is the border so strategic? Well, one of the reasons is that many folks from the southern part of Mexico are seeking to have a better financial life. And so they come to the border hoping to get a job in an assembly plant called La Maquiladora. And for the most part, they have been able to do that. Their level of living is higher in the border areas than it is in other parts. In comparison, they may make between $600 and $800 a month on the border, whereas in other parts, they might only make $225 a month. So it's very interesting that they come to the border. In addition, the border area is very transient. And so in the year 2001, the statistic was that over 300 million people crossed the border in that year. And it's become even a higher level. In fact, in San Diego alone, 60,000 people cross the border from Tijuana into San Diego every day just to go to work. So it's like going from here to D.C. to work, you know, it's that type of crossing. And in addition to that, of course, is the whole idea of undocumented crossings. Many, many folks cross over into the southern areas of California, of New Mexico, and of Texas. And so basically even in Naco, Arizona, is probably the highest level of crossings. To the tune of close to 5 million a year is what we heard back a few years ago. I don't know whether that statistic still, it's going down. Yeah, there's been a lot of crackdown in Arizona, for instance, on employers employing undocumented employees, and so therefore folks have actually gone back into Mexico because of that, because they don't want to get caught. But you see that basically there's a lot of flux that's happening on the border. And so, you know, some people say, well, we should build a wall on the border. We should just block off everything. Well, some areas, we do see a wall. In El Paso, they finished up a wall here last year. And basically, it's about, 12, 14 feet high, somewhere around there. And it has curbed some of the crossings. But I talked with a Border Patrol agent in Yuma, California, a year and a half ago, and was asking him about it. He says, well, we just finished a new wall to the east side of Yuma. So we put 8-foot pieces of steel down in the ground. Then we put another 12-foot pieces of steel on top of that. Secure, right? 2 days later, Mexicans were there with plasma cutters, cutting a hole in the wall and walking through it. So, is a wall the answer? I think a wall is the answer, but the wall is a wall of churches, not a wall of steel. If we can take the gospel to the folks on the border, they will take it elsewhere. And we can be reaching many millions of people by just reaching them on the border. So it's very strategic. One of the things that we heard back about 2002 when we were going through our pre-field training in New York City, one of the men said that when somebody moves, or when somebody gets married, or when somebody changes jobs, it's a quote-unquote catastrophe in their life. Now, I'm not saying that when you get married it's a catastrophe. I don't mean to say that. But it's a change. It's an upheaval in your life. And so when people come to the border, if we can reach them with the gospel within the first year that they're there, they are more apt to receive Christ and to accept the message of the gospel than they are after that time. Well, currently, five families are showing up in Juarez every day looking for work and looking for a better life. So if that's the case, we need to be reaching those families with the gospel as soon as they show up. As well as, like Tito's been working with the folks in Montana Vista, and we've seen fruit from all that, from their ministries out there. We need to be hitting these people right off the bat, and that's where the strategy really comes into play. So BEAM has been around for 20 years. It was begun in 1989, 1990 by Moises Zapata and a few others, Dan Young, Jose Mayo, and others joined the team as the years went by. It began in Juarez and El Paso. In 1997, we saw a man named Carlos Ireta come from the Monterey area up to Laredo and begin a church there in Laredo. Then in 2000, Gary Nant, from who was working with us as an MTW missionary in Juarez, moved out to Tijuana and began to work out there. Since then, we've seen two particularized churches in the BEAM ministry, one in El Paso, Christ the King, the other is Promesa de Vida in Juarez. In addition to that, we have eight mission churches that we have working with us now and are growing. Las Tierras from Tito's church is one of those as well. But our vision is that over the next 12 years to 10 years, we will see 34 more churches being created in that. Now, you say, okay, in 20 years, you've had 10. How do you expect to see 34 in the next 10 years? Well, one of the things that we need to do in order to see that happen is to begin equipping men for the ministry. And I'll get to that in just a few moments. I'd like to tell you a little bit as far as just what it is that we're doing as far as education is concerned. We have established a seminary in the year 2000 in Juarez. We've had 16 graduates from that seminary, two of which are working with us or have worked with us in the past. In addition to that, we have a LAMP ministry, which is from Mission to North America. It's called Leadership and Ministry Preparation. And that ministry basically is to educate and train Hispanic men in the United States for ministry within the PCA and along the border. In addition to that, then, we basically have other training areas that we're working with, but one of the things that we want to really do as far as BEAM is concerned is to begin equipping men through mentorships. And we've started doing that in some areas. Some of the things that are going on, as we talked about the building in Juarez, and we talked about just how that has grown and the plans that we're looking to have as far as that community center is concerned. It's a tremendous opportunity that we have there, and we're looking forward to doing that. Above that, you'll see that we have Manuel Padilla, who you all know as Tito, working there. This is his third year, is that right? That's Las Tierras. That congregation is growing. It's just about maxed out the band room that they're meeting in, and they have about 90 people in attendance every Sunday. And I should actually let you stand up here and tell you all the statistics. Why don't you just tell them a little bit about what's going on? Do they know much about what you're doing there? Okay, go ahead.
Of course they do. They pray for us all the time.
We have, well, God has, you know, as you know, we've been in this band room now for about 2 years, a little over 2 years, and God has brought folk to us. We've seen people come to faith in Christ, and we're always pushing, you know. It's so easy to just get settled down. You know, there's a sense in which, well, okay, we're not 25 people anymore, where you say, well, all these empty chairs, and now, you know, everything's getting full, and the temptation is just to say, well, okay, and now we can relax. Now we can just focus on teaching. And so one of our pushes now this year is to encourage people in sharing the gospel. But we've started this new, you want to call it a new ministry, basically where we take, we develop this little card. It says, pray for our neighbor outreach. And the top half of this card that Gene and I worked on is a little information about Las Tierras Church, but it's our, it expresses our desire to pray for our neighbor. And so we've given these cards out to the folk in Las Tierras Mission, and we say, you take some, and then you go to your neighbor, you go to your coworker, and say, look, as a church, all right, we want to pray for you. And as you know, most people won't turn down prayer. On occasion, some will. So you give them the bottom half of their card, and they fill out the request. And you keep that. But they keep the top half of the information of the church and things like that. And you have their name and their address. The idea is that you commit these prayer requests to the Lord. You bring them to the throne of grace. And then you go back and you visit these people. And you say, look, I've been praying for you. How has God answered your prayer? It's such an easy way, but, you know, folk are really, you know, we're all a little hesitant to go out and share the gospel at times, but so that's one of the things we're doing, just to keep on encouraging people in our community. We're a blend. I think last year at this time we might have been, I don't know, maybe 50% Anglo, 50% Hispanic. God has flipped that. We are probably 70-80% Hispanic, and then there's some Anglo families. It produces a wonderful tension in our midst. I have the opportunity, as I'm preaching to them, to get down and talk about cultural things. And we talk about the gospel and how it applies in our lives. And I said, you know, you Anglos really love being on time, don't you? And that's just a sign of good discipleship, being punctual. And you look at those Hispanics and you go, oh, when will they ever learn and become like me? And the Hispanics, you know, ustedes miran a los Anglos. You look at the Anglos and you go, poor people, all they do is work and work and work. They never have time to eat some tacos and burritos and just hang around, you know? And so I said, do you see what's going on? Do you see, punctuality is not going to draw you closer to Christ, but you know, if you're considerate one to another, and you learn from each other, then what we see here in Las Tierras, what God can do is create another culture. It's not Hispanic, it's not Anglo, but this Christ culture. Something that is beyond you and me. And so that's our challenge, to live in that tension. And I have gotten encouragement from some people to say, you know, you probably should just start, have an English service and then go to a Spanish service. And maybe we may need to do that. But right now we're translating. We have a simultaneous translation going on. We sing in English. We sing in Spanish. We read the scriptures in English and Spanish. And it's hard. And I'm asking the people of Las Tierras, will you live in that tension with us? You know, because it's a good preparation for living in God's presence around the throne of grace. Well, I'll let Gene go on.
That's okay. Thank you. Exactly what Tito's doing in El Paso is happening in other places of the border. And we're seeing this tension constantly, even on the Mexican side, of how it relates to folks who come from the U.S. into Mexico and vice versa. We see out west further in Nogales. Last year we began to have a group of three church planters go into that city. It's the very first time that Beam has ever put multiple church planters on the same church. And we've seen explosive growth in that group. Within 1 year's time, they've been able to develop 150 contacts, 10 Bible studies. They were having 25 people worship with them. They've maxed out the living room that they were started in. And so this month they're going to be renting a brand new facility that gives them more space to meet similar to what Tito had to do with the band room from his home, and we're seeing that expand very rapidly. So God is moving among the folks on the border. We're seeing it out to the west even further in Mexicali, where a church was started a few years ago, probably about 4 years now, on the Mexicali side, expanded into the El Centro side. We now have Ray Call there, an MTW missionary working with this group. We're seeing this group expanding. They were 2 years ago, they were donated a 14,000 square foot metal building. They're now looking for a place to put that on, and we'll have tremendous growth, I'm sure, after that. In the West Coast, we're seeing Juan Arjona in Escondido, California, who is working with an all-Hispanic area. It's a Spanish-speaking congregation, but they were meeting in a more Anglo church, and they just didn't feel that they were ministering correctly, and so they moved their ministry to a park area called Mission Park, and it's in a totally Hispanic area. He's experiencing tremendous growth among those folks. In fact, one of the ministries that they do now is a food distribution. And over 200 people show up every Saturday morning to receive food from their ministry. So they are reaching out. We've seen expansion on our ministry over the last year. Dan Young has moved from El Paso now over to McAllen, Texas. And in December, he moved there. And already we're starting to see growth as far as his contacts. The presbytery and everything is moving ahead with that. So we're seeing a lot of expansion that's happening all along the border, and God is really blessing. But I get back to that 34 churches that we look to try to plant in the next 10 years. Well, the only way that I can see that we're going to do that is to equip men like Juan Antonio Garcia for this ministry. Now, somebody said, well, you got to recruit them from somewhere. Okay, well, we've tried. We've looked, and we've looked, and we've looked. And most people who are on the United States side, most pastors who have now gone through seminary and spent $80,000 to $100,000 going to seminary education, don't want to come work along the border because it's hard, very hard. And so we say, well, okay, how about the Mexican side? Let's try to find guys from there. Okay. they're not to be found either. Because most times the men are not well prepared in Mexico, nor do they want to come to the northern desert border. They want to stay in the south where they're comfortable. So how do we make these people? Well, that's just the thing. We make them. We create them. We take guys that are in 8th grade, 7th grade in the churches, and we begin to cultivate them. Juan Antonio came to the border in the late 1990s looking for a job. He came there, and as a Baptist, sort of a Baptist background, nominal, he basically was asked, why don't you start a Bible study? Well, the Bible study included men from Baptist church, Methodist church, Presbyterian churches, some charismatic groups. He says, I don't know how to reach all these folks. And so he was able to contact Raciel Gomez, who was a pastor at that time of one of the Beam churches in Tierra Prometida in Juarez. And Raciel took Juan Antonio under his wing and began to teach him. Well, through that ministry, he accepted Christ. He realized that he was not a believer before that. But not only did he accept Christ, but he says, I want to learn more because I want to share what I've learned. And so he enrolled in the San Pablo Seminary in Juarez. And 4 years later, he graduated in 2005. He was one of the pastors, actually, when George was talking about coming down and helping to work. And by the way, George, I didn't work you too hard because the next time you were screwing, you know, forms, I think. So that was really, really easy with Allison. But we saw Juan Antonio begin to take a leadership role in this new church called Promesa de Vida, which formed from the joining of two other churches. Juan Antonio is now the pastor of that church, and this month probably will be receiving his official call from the church to become their full-time pastor after having served 3 years in that capacity already. And so we see the fact that we've seen this man grow up, if it were, in the Beam ministry. He has the DNA of Beam, which means that we're not just about planting one church, but about creating a movement of churches all along the border and beyond. Did you know that Mexicans make some of the best ministers to Muslims. We need to prepare these guys. We need to be able to send them out and send folks from their churches out. This is what we want to do. This is some of the things that we've been talking about as a team over just the last few months. What is our hedgehog? Anybody ever read the book by Collins, Good to Great? Okay, a few of you business guys, all right. Well, you think that that doesn't really apply to ministry, but what it really means is finding your focus, finding the thing that you do best in the world. Well, I believe that Beam equips the best. We have guys like Tito who are experienced church planners. We have guys who are experienced in education. We have guys who work with Mercy Ministries. We need to start consolidating these specialists into short, small teams and become, as I like to nickname them, the Beam Seals, where we'll go out and we'll help churches, even like yours, to minister to Hispanics within your area. So these are things that are up and coming in that regard. So the question is, will you partner with us? Well, you already do, in some senses. First of all, we'd like you to ask you to pray for us. There is a picture of this sword up on our website near the bottom of the homepage. If you click on that, enter your email address. We will enroll you into as a prayer warrior in our army of 2,000 prayer warriors that we're trying to raise up. We have about 160 so far who have committed to praying, but we need 2,000, one for every mile of the border. Because only with prayer do we see that God will really truly use our ministry. That is the conduit that He has ordained, and we ask for that. In addition to that, you are part of the Beam Partnership. And as you see, there are 12 others alongside of you who work with us. Now, you may say, okay, well, what's so special about the Beam Partnership? Well, let me tell you, as the coordinator, as I look at this 2,000-mile border, as I try to figure out what is it that we should be doing as a team, these guys are my backup. They're the ones who come alongside of us and say, you know what, that's a really, really dumb idea, or we are with you on this. We're going to strengthen you. We're going to come alongside with you. We had Steve with us this summer at our team retreat in August, and I value Steve a lot for the fact that he's willing to just come alongside me and others on our team and just say, look, I'm here for you. If you want to talk, I'm here for you. And that is of extreme value to me. We also need you to give. We have many missionaries on our team right now who are underfunded and are raising support. We have the Burkempers, the Maroonies, and the Holidays who are coming to our team who need still thousands of dollars a month in support that they need to raise. We have some folks like Josue Mayu who are underfunded right now. We have some other projects that we need to raise money for. We have $4 million that we need for a building. And so there's always plenty of opportunities to contribute in that way. In addition, we need you to serve. You've come down to us on short-term teams. We need more of that. We need folks. It's just tremendous how the Beam Ministry has actually begun through short-term ministry. And I just really look forward to seeing what God is going to do through short-term groups in the future. And so basically, we also need folks who are going to be helping us to equip. Those of you who are astute in the Scriptures, we need you to come down and teach classes in our seminaries. Help us to come alongside some of our church planters and mentor them, love them, be able to teach them some of the things that are dealing with, how to deal with just issues like the ladies were talking about here earlier as far as the stresses that even a housewife and a mother faces. These are the things that we need to be able to equip our people to help them to grow and to mentor others. We just look forward to your joining with us and continuing with us. We appreciate your support. Thank you for your personal support as well as for the support of the Beam Ministry. And I just praise God that we've seen in 20 years what God has done from nothing, basically on the border, to now having a team of about 22 of us there and looking forward to that growing even further. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions that you might have? I don't know how much time we have. Yes.
Why is it that you said that the Mexican
Well, because number one, they're Moorish in background, and so basically they look very much like a Muslim person. Doesn't Tito look like a Muslim? I mean, I never want to go through an airport line. I never want to go through a security line when he's with me. That's it. But they have the ability to really relate more closely with folks of a Muslim background. And so that's why they connect much better in that way. Plus they can learn Arabic much faster than I can. Yes.
Yeah. They're doing well, thank God. Well, let's see, Lizzie, our youngest is 13, Rebecca's 15, Josh was 18. He just got his driver's license last month, and so pray for me. And he keeps on asking me every day, well, am I on the insurance yet? I says, no, son, you're not on the insurance yet. But Joshua is... you know, he's going to graduate from high school, and he doesn't know what he wants to do. So you can pray for him. Pray that God would give him an ambition, a desire to do something specific, you know, whether it's work or going to school. He's got those two choices before him. The other choices of just, you know, hanging out on the beach in, you know, the Rio Grande is not open to him. So the girls are doing well. They're very busy and many activities. Kim is doing, I think, marvelously. She has been, we had been homeschooling for a number of years, and a year or two ago, now we stopped, and so Kim has some time, and so she's certified now to teach in the state of Texas, and so she's gone back to teaching, at least on a subbing basis, and she's had these long-term sub jobs, and she finds a lot of delight in that, in teaching, especially middle schoolers. So, she just loves those 6th to 8th graders, but they're doing really well. The life is, pray for me because I probably have the hardest time in all this because, I'm used to a particular rhythm in our family and it's changed. And I just haven't gotten in sync with that. You know, and so I'm usually the last one to find out about anything that's going on in the family. But my kids are nice. His dad will tell you if you need to know. So, but you know, just say if you have adolescence, those changes in life, and families go through those changes. Yeah.
Okay. So, how's the family doing that burned out and rebuilt?
The Pena family, they are doing really well. Last February, they professed faith, and they are part and parcel of Las Tierras Church. Brenda is the one, the daughter, who's 18. She's the one that translates for us. Because she is she does a fantastic job. They're involved in other ministries. I have a Bible study with them every Thursday in Montana Vista, and it's been a delight to see how God has grown them. We did different things initially, but then we just decided, you know, let's just start from the beginning of the Bible. And so we're in the middle of Exodus now, and it is just a blast to see how they are understanding the Scriptures. So the good things going on in their life. Pray for them. There's some significant changes probably coming their way. Hector Pena wants to apply for citizenship, U.S. citizenship, but there are some obstacles that they have to overcome in that. I mean, there's the financial obstacle. It's really costly. And so they struggle. He's got his job, and that's good, but they still struggle to make ends meet. But they're enjoying the home that the Lord provided for them. So their kids are doing wonderfully. So,
Peter, we have time for two more questions.
Two more questions.
May I just introduce my wife?
Sure.
You might not know her, but Luann, we've been in October, this past August, we celebrated 35 years of marriage. And we have 3 children and 6 grandchildren. So Grandma got her a fix of her grandson over these last couple of days with our son that lives outside of Frederick. And then we head up to Harrisburg this afternoon to visit our older daughter. But Luann is my right-hand person. in many, many ways. But believe me, as she is now my full-time administrative assistant. We both work out of our home, and she handles all the team finances. She schedules all my flights. She does everything to help me with that. Plus, she handles all the relations with the short-term teams that come in, like with Tito and so on. And she's very efficient, and I really appreciate her very much. So I wanted to introduce her to you all and make sure that you know the other face on the end of the line sometimes.
Amen. And you already had one question. That's enough. Go on, sir. Go ahead.
We opened up two trips this summer for Juarez. We believe that it is. We have three, but one of them's filled already. But I think that it's going to be. We're going to be very cautious about it. And the thing is, there's no routine that we try to vary our routine. Try to do things a little bit differently than we've done in the past. And but I talked with the hotel that the folks stay in, and they said they haven't had any violence. Not that they would probably tell me about it, but in any case, we think that it would be safe enough to take things in. It does not look like there is as much kidnapping and random targeted as there used to be. It's more directly gang against gang, and so yes, there is the chance that you could be caught in a crossfire, but we serve a sovereign God. And so, you know, if indeed God ordains that something would happen, there's nothing that we could do about that. It could happen right here in Columbia, Maryland. So,
right. Gene, I'd like to respond to that. This afternoon, I'm going to have the opportunity to be meeting with Gene and Luann and Tito, and I'm going to get more information about that to see at least if there's a possibility of sending a small, if you will, an adult team into some area to do some work. I'd be very concerned about having teenagers going into a place like Ciudad Juarez right now. But I'll have more information, and I'll pass that around so that you'll all know.
Yeah. We have a sports camp that we do every year, and you can just pray for that. It's been a wonderful outreach in the community. I think there's already a team that's coming for that. But we may have another project. It's just... We're working on another house, the Rodriguez house, and we thought that we'd be further along, and it's not. So we might have need of a team. So if you're somebody or had some construction experience and expertise that would like to do that on the El Paso side, that's also another opportunity.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Luann.